Welcome, everyone, to January's recap for Hanover Happenings. If we weren't sure it's winter, well, in the last week, it certainly feels like it. We've got a lot of things in the queue right now as we start to look forward to town meeting in May, so thanks for joining for this update. This month, we cover some updates from January's select board meetings, including acceptance of several unanticipated revenues from the state, getting set up for the Community Power Coalition of New Hampshire and Hanover Community Power, various donations, several appointments, update to punch card pricing for Lebanon's landfill, a big budget and tax rate discussion, plus a few other updates for my monthly report, including on some human resources, hiring, and personnel issues, updates on downtown Hanover, sustainable Hanover, and a couple other updates. In this month's Community Spotlight, we talk with Kyle Mullins, class of 2023 at Dartmouth College. Kyle and I sit down to record a podcast for the Rockefeller Center, Rocky Talks, where he is a program assistant, and then continue the conversation for Hanover Happenings. Kyle shares with us fond memories of interacting with kind town residents while working at Still North during the height of COVID, working and being editor-in-chief at The D, the student newspaper at Dartmouth, thinking about town-gown relations from a student's perspective, a little bit about housing issues, and his own exciting future exploring government and public policy issues, and why Hanover and Dartmouth are such special places to live, study, and work. And in this month's Employee Spotlight, we meet our new finance director, Ellen Bullion, as well as our other two finance department staff, Kara McCusker and Tammy Chapin. And we learn a little bit about what the finance department does, the huge effort that's been required from both of them in the last few months being without a finance director, and some of the challenges and goals that lay ahead. So thanks for joining again for this January recap from Hanover Happenings. Okay, so first we'll jump into a couple updates from our two select board meetings in January. On January 9th, we talked about the Community Power Coalition of New Hampshire cost share agreement. That's the agenda item. And really what this was is just some documents that we need to sign and set up to set up our Hanover Community Power Program. Hopefully you've heard a little bit about this at this point. This has been a huge effort from Sustainable Hanover and several others to participate in a pretty exciting cooperative in New Hampshire where we are able to offer the ability for folks in town to buy power through basically a cooperative, and not only at better rates than you'd be able to do individually, but also with more renewable options, moving over the next couple years towards being able to buy with a 100% renewable option, which helps gets us closer to some of our 2030 sustainability goals. There's going to be a lot more information coming out about this program in the coming weeks. There is some information on our website as well. But if you're curious for more information right now, everybody who's affected is going to be getting some information in the mail, and we're going to be doing a lot more announcements and postings. But if you do have any questions at this point, I'm going to include some links in the show notes on this episode. You can click those links and learn a little bit more. We set a bunch of public hearings, which I'll come back to because they're all covered in the next meeting. We accepted some donations, for example, to the Aetna Library, and went through a little bit of other business in our meeting. On our January 23rd meeting, I'll cover a couple of these different agenda items at once. And so in New Hampshire, when you receive revenue that is unanticipated, that was not part of your budget, you have to set and then hold a public hearing as that is basically modifying the budget. And so there was a couple different revenues that we got back from the state that came in above what we had anticipated. And the other was a refund from the New Hampshire retirement system. Both of those were triggered by changes at the legislative and state level, but they do have, of course, a positive impact for us. We also accepted unanticipated funds in the form of a $75,000 grant, which is really exciting. And this is for an Invest NH Municipal Planning and Zoning Grant. This is pretty great, and kudos to our Planning and Zoning Office. This is going to allow us to do a whole program of public engagement and discussions, workshops, and work around affordable housing and our zoning ordinance. Ultimately, this is potentially the first phase of a multi-phase program with additional grant funds that may be available in the future that will help us rewrite our zoning ordinance, making things more clear, more consistent with our goals. We also discussed briefly that Lebanon has raised their rates for the punch cards for folks who use the landfill there, and that went up to $15 to $20. We had a handful of other business items on the agenda, as well as two appointments that I want to make sure to mention. One, which is to the Zoning Board of Adjustment, and that is Dick Green, who is a current alternate member and has been on the ZBA for 5 years and is now a full member. And the other is Catherine Rieke, who is appointed to Sustainable Hanover. So congratulations to both of them, and thank you for volunteering. If you're interested in volunteering, we do have a number of openings on other boards, committees, and commissions. So if you have any questions about that, you can reach out to me, and we'll help plug you in the right direction based on whatever you're interested in. We also had a big conversation about the budget. I'm going to link to a memo that I wrote that is available on our website in the agenda section at hanovernh.org. And in this memo that I provided to our finance committee and to the select board, we go over some sort of conceptual level frameworks for how we're approaching the budget this year. And so there's a couple things that we wanted to cover. And one is at the beginning of the budget season, in the late summer and fall of last year, we had laid out some timelines and goals that we were hoping to accomplish this year. We had to scale some of that back, and we are running behind, as we've talked about in prior select board meetings. And this is largely due to staffing shortages and losing our finance director. So we've been in a little bit of a scramble on that front. Really excited with our new finance director in place, what we're going to be able to accomplish. But the last few months have been really challenging. We've had to scale back and focus a little bit on what we can make sure to do in this year's budget. So a couple things that sort of drove that that are just worth mentioning. One is just for us internally getting reorganized in several and kind of internal accounting areas where we did fall behind, and because of the lack of institutional memory right now in the organization, we've just had to do a little extra work to make sure that we were able to provide our auditors with the right information to get our audit from last year completed, which we're running a little bit behind on. And all of that's obviously really important because we want to make sure that our budget sits on top of the right numbers. The next is that the select board had committed to beginning the first phase of a multi-phase review of our employment, wage, and compensation policies to help ensure that we're paying our staff fair, competitive market rates for the really incredible work that they do. And now, you know, we've communicated to our collective bargaining units and all of our staff that we've not gotten what we needed out of the salary study that we hired a consultant to perform. So we kind of had to shift and allocate significant internal time to review all of those policy areas so that we could provide both short-term recommendations for what we need to do in this budget year, and also now that we're about to be bringing on a new human resources director, that we're going to be moving quickly this spring into a very comprehensive and interactive wage and compensation study that will provide us in the next budget year, 24-25, a more comprehensive set of medium and long-term recommendations. So we basically had to shift a little bit of the work that we expected outside consultants to be doing to our internal staff, even while we were sort of facing a staffing shortage. And then the last piece was just for me, being new to Hanover, of course, getting up to speed on all of our department's budgets, histories, needs, concerns, goals. And so we have a really amazing team of department heads who really helped provide a smoother budget process than it could have been. But all of those things definitely delayed us a little bit in our budget process, and we had to scale back some of the changes that we wanted to make. This is also not the easiest budget year, and so there are some unique challenges that we're facing right now, and I'll run through a couple of them that are the sort of most impactful. Record 40-year high inflation and rising costs in a number of areas that are well beyond our control, such as raw materials, fuel, health insurance, things like that. record labor shortages, especially in the public sector and especially in our region in the Upper Valley, which is largely due to lack of housing availability and childcare services. We do have several under-budgeted program areas, including a really big chunk for staff compensation, for retirement accruals, election expenses, and a few others. There's also the likelihood of significant incoming debt service for existing major infrastructure repairs and upgrades. That is mostly related to water and wastewater. So that majority of that is going to be borne by the ratepayers, not the taxpayers, which we can talk a little more about. But it also indicated the need for a more holistic capital planning as part of the budget process. The next is that several areas, and we talked about this a little bit a few months ago when we were setting our tax rate, that there were some areas in our budget where we had revenue lines that were too high, and we're going to need to scale those back a little bit. Next is a somewhat of a high prior fund balance utilization in a way that we may want to discuss phasing out. And of course, there is a discrepancy between the town definition and the state definition of fund balance, so it's something we want to talk a little bit about. And the last kind of major challenge for this year is a recommendation from the trustees of the trust fund that we will likely want to significantly reduce new spending out of some of the funds, such as Brissett, due to really tight market conditions. So we're going to discuss all of those in a little more detail when we get to the budget presentations at the end of February. But basically, the story and what we'll find in future years with all of those different factors at play, that we have a little bit more of an imbalance in our budget than we may have seemed, that we have a little more expenses than we do revenue, which is basically a deficit, and that is something that is likely to be built into our budget going forward in future years. So that is a structural deficit. It's not a one-time occurrence. Now, it's a little bit harder to see some of that over the last few years because some of our accounting and reporting practices, but also how a handful of dynamics basically netted out. And so what I mean by that is that, for example, employees are allowed to accrue a pretty significant amount of earned paid time off over the time that they work in Hanover. When they retire, the town has to pay those amounts out at different rates based on how long the person has been here and some other details. But it's a pretty big number in some cases. And we do not have the funds appropriately budgeted to pay for those. However, because we've had so many staff vacancies over the last couple of years, the savings in one of those areas allowed money to be available in other areas. Some of those different things that have been a wash in the last few years, we don't think will be a wash going forward. So it sort of raises the concern to a level that informs a slightly different perspective that we want to approach this year's budget with. And so basically, what we talked about is that anytime when you're faced with dynamics such as this, where either in a current year or what we're looking at is that in future years, we expect that there may be greater expenses than what we currently have budgeted for, there's really only a few tools and options that are available to a municipal government to make a difference about that. And I ran through those, and I'll run through those with you all now. There's really only five basic options that a municipal government has. One is cut costs or eliminate services. Two is increase non-tax revenue. Three is borrow money. Four is raise taxes on existing taxpayers. And five is create new taxpayers. So let's run through each of those real quick here. This is a bit of a preview of some of the discussions that we'll be having about the budget over the next couple weeks and months. So the first option was to cut costs or eliminate services. Basically, eliminate services is not something we're really looking at. That's not the guidance we've gotten from the community or the select board that people want to close down departments or services or reduce hours or anything like that. In fact, what we're really getting feedback about is that a number of key areas actually folks want to see expanded services. So we don't have a mindset right now of eliminating entire service areas that we provide currently. And cutting costs can feel like an easy solution, but it's not as impactful as it might seem at first glance. The first point is that a lot of the low-hanging fruit in Hanover has already been done. we have a relatively, and in some cases, surprisingly lean organization in many areas, but there is not easy waste that can just be cut out. Some organizations might have that, but the prior select boards and management and department heads, they're running pretty lean, efficient operations. Not to say there's not a couple things here and there, but by and large, the organization does not have any low-hanging fruit waste areas that just can be cut out. Now, most of our budget goes towards salaries and wages for our staff. That is an area that the select board has identified that we are under budgeting, not over budgeting. We have more commitment that we need to make than what we have right now, not less. So that kind of takes that off the table as far as being an area where we could cut costs. And then many of the areas that we might in the past have been able to, went out, put out an RFP, got multiple responses back, pushed back, gotten lower rates, a lot of those markets, basically as a consumer right now, as a municipal government purchasing things, it's not really favorable to the consumer. We have fewer options and rising costs in a lot of areas of things that we purchase. And many of our fixed costs are rising beyond our control, such as for fuel or for insurance. So when you take some of those pieces out, what we're left with is a pretty small piece of the pie relating to operating expenses that are not salaries and wages, that are not fixed costs, and that are not products or services that we buy that there's just not as much competition for, or that we just can't find as good of a deal as we may have been able to do 5 or 10 years ago. Now, there's a bunch of areas here that we do want to work on, but they're not going to make huge impacts. You're not necessarily going to notice them on your tax bill. And so that means that we may upgrade our phone system, or we may get a better deal on something by doing joint purchasing with another community, or we might save money by reducing paper usage and postage usage by a new software program. And these are all valuable changes for a bunch of reasons, but they're probably not going to make a big impact. They're not going to be noticeable on your tax bill. So eliminating services, cutting costs, not going to make a huge difference when we're talking about, six-figure differences between basically what we have budgeted and what we know we're going to need to be budgeting for certain things in future years. So next is increasing non-tax revenue. And so non-tax revenue, as opposed to tax revenue, is all the money that comes in through non-taxes. And that might be things like permits, fees, rate schedules, fines, tickets, and you could even include one-time revenues like grants. These fees, all of those fees, those are required to be set based on the costs of providing that service rather than a budgetary need, meaning that you, and most states are like this, but in New Hampshire, you are not allowed to, increase the cost of a building permit because you want to expand the hours of the library. We're not allowed to do that. You can only increase the cost of the building permit if it costs us more to provide the building permit process and service. And so we can't use that area to just generally increase revenue. Number three is to borrow money. Now, using debt to pay for a structural deficit is not a financial practice that I think anybody in Hanover would advocate for. This is the epitome of kicking the can down the road. It's basically the equivalent of having, let's say, your rent or your mortgage is too high. You don't have the income to support that high of a payment. And instead of reducing ongoing costs or increasing your income, you basically just put the difference on a credit card each month with no plan to be able to how you're going to pay that off in the future. So that is not something that, again, I don't think anybody in Hanover would advocate for doing that. And it's not something, of course, that we're considering. Now, borrowing money can sometimes be very valuable or even necessary. So it may be necessary, for example, on really large planned capital expenses like infrastructure upgrades, where not only do you need to spread the cost out, but that hard asset is going to be in use by people for, say, 20 years. So you want 20 years of people paying for it rather than the taxpayers or ratepayers in one single year. But again, not a tool for managing annual ongoing operating expenses, with maybe one or two very rare exceptions where you might use credit as a bridge between 1 or 2 years of a deficit where you know you have increased revenue coming on in the future. But again, not a great practice, not something that we're really looking at. Number four, you could raise taxes on existing taxpayers. Now, this is one everybody's familiar with. Of course, I'm coming from a state in New Jersey that also has really high property taxes, and as does New Hampshire, generally speaking. And raising taxes can sometimes be totally reasonable. For example, if there is inflation every year, which for better or for worse, that is how the economy in the United States is built, right? It is targeted to have a small amount of inflation every year. We have an economy that is, the baseline is growth. And so that growth requires a small amount of inflation to exist. And so if you don't raise taxes or cut services in some other way to keep up with inflation, it means that over time, you may be undercutting the purchasing power of the dollars in your budget. And that can be really add up over years. Raising taxes is also not inappropriate if there's a new service that is being requested or demanded by the community and additional money is needed to pay for that new service or program. However, raising taxes, of course, can also be used as sort of a crutch in some governments because it can be seen as a dial that can just be turned to open up new money. Now, in Hanover, this is not the case. The select board and town meeting has not used its tax base in that way. It's been very mindful of the burden that already exists and the burden of increasing taxes and what that means. So raising taxes is almost certainly going to be part of the mix, but it can't be relied upon as the only way to generate new revenue in the future to pay for things that are not currently budgeted. Number five is creating new taxpayers. Now, we're not lucky enough to be the federal government where we can just create and print new money, although it's not really printed, it's all digital these days, but we can't just print new money when we need more money. You know, state and local governments don't have that option. And so the biggest dial that state and local governments tend to have here is that can have the largest impact on the budget is creating new taxpayers. And what this means is we anticipate a certain amount of growth in our total assessed value in our grand list every year. That growth can come oversimplistic, but can come from two categories. Increased value of existing taxpayers, for example, renovations or improvements to homes or increased property values due to market or housing conditions, but it's all the same taxpayers, right? Or it can come from adding new taxpayers into our tax base. And how all of this plays out is heavily interconnected with local zoning laws and other related land use and housing policies and initiatives. For example, higher density of housing or commercial spaces may increase the value of a property, but it also may add new taxpayers into the mix. And so, in very rough approximate terms, a building that contains about 25 units in Hanover will generate about $66,000 in tax revenue towards the municipal budget. If that building had 50 units instead of 25 units, it would generate an additional $66,000 for municipal into the municipal revenue. Now, that $66,000 of additional revenue for the town is in large part being borne not just by the existing taxpayers, but by the 25 new apartment units that people are moving into who are paying rent that did not exist before. And that rent, of course, goes to their property owner, and that property owner pays the taxes. So much like an insurance pool, where the more people that you add into the pool, typically on average will reduce the risk and reduce the cost for everybody else, you can think of a tax base in a similar way. Now, obviously, there is a cost to adding new individuals into the community as well, but in nearly all cases of development, especially higher density downtown development in things like our urban compact zone, where there's already many municipal infrastructure and services in place, those developments tend to be a big net gain for the community. And there's a few different metrics that we can use when we get into more conversations about that in the future, about looking at where's the highest value. For example, paving over green space and building giant parking lots and creating new infrastructure, maybe not the biggest value, but building in areas where there's already a footprint of a building, for example, building residential above commercial in our downtown, that can be really valuable. And the problem here is that if you don't have a really up-to-date master plan that guides some of these development practices, you could end up doing redevelopment or development in a way that is not in line with the community's values. But we are nearing the end of completing our sustainable master plan process, and which means that in short order, our plan will be the most up-to-date it's been in a very long time. And that all of the details in that plan were worked out through a very interactive, well-engaged community process over the last year or so. And so now that we have some of those more up-to-date guiding principles, we can create some integration between our budget planning process that helps informs what programs, services, and policies we might want to be considering in the future. And we can integrate that with our sort of zoning and planning process. Each one should be a sort of two-way communication between the other, so that when we're doing our budgeting, we have an understanding of what policies are in place on the zoning and housing side. What kind of development can we expect? What kind of growth in our grand list can we expect? And as a municipal government, we actually have the ability, right, to put our foot on the gas pedal from a redevelopment perspective at a bunch of different levels. And we can talk about what that means. We'll talk about what that means more in future meetings, but it's all intentional, right? Our policies from a zoning perspective, the economic development activities that we do or don't participate in or facilitate, all of that stuff basically leads to how much redevelopment happens or doesn't happen. And that leads to how much money we might have in our budget in future years for new services or new programs or new policies. So basically what we're talking about here is that there's a whole bunch of different challenges to our budget, some of which are very recent, just in the last couple years or this year, and all of which are basically adding up to that we need to have some conversations about how we're going to pay for things in future years that are not currently in our budget. And we don't want to use any of the bad strategies, such as borrowing money to pay for those things, or overly burden existing taxpayers in Hanover. And so that creating of the new taxpayers conversation is going to be something that we'll want to engage in some really thoughtful and thorough conversations about, you know, over the coming months and years as we look at moving towards setting ourselves up for success in future budget years. So that is a little bit of an overview of some of the perspective with which we are approaching the budget this year. We're going to be putting out a lot more information about that. Of course, if you have any questions in the meantime, you can reach out to me. The memo that I just basically summarized is also available on our website, and I will link to in the show notes as well. Okay, so we also did a couple other, I gave a couple updates in our January 23rd meeting, which I'll just summarize here as well. So since my last monthly report, we've had one employee leave employment and two begin employment with the town. So we want to congratulate William Brown in the Department of Public Works for many years of service to the town and community, and we wish him well in his retirement. We also welcome Rebecca Berger joining some other seasonal rehires in our out-of-school program at Parks and Rec. And we welcome Lauren Cockrell to the Howe Library. Also provided an update on our salary study. I mentioned this earlier that we had engaged an outside consultant to complete the first phase of studying our wages and compensation with market data. Over the last few weeks or so, we'd been going back and forth trying to kind of get what we need out of that, which we do not have yet at this point. So we had to shift a little bit and do some internal work to provide short-term recommendations of what we need to do here. As our HR director will start in February, we will then take the existing work with our consultant on that salary study to kind of get what we need out of that and plug that into a much more thorough study that we will be driving over the next 6 to 9 months to create sort of more medium and long-term plans and recommendations. Over the last month, I've also attended a handful more webinars and meetings about retention and recruitment issues. I include a little bit more about that in my report. I also include a link to a Washington Post article entitled "A Slow-Moving Crisis is Paralyzing States and Cities," and I just happened to come across that, and that touches on some of the labor workforce personnel issues that at this point is definitely a broken record if you've been listening to my updates and reports. We are also going to be announcing very shortly, probably by the time this podcast is out, our new human resources director who will be starting in February. So we're really excited about that. We talked a little bit about updates from downtown Hanover, which is that we're continuing to meet with a working group of about 10 or 15 different business owners, as well as some stakeholders, for example, from the Upper Valley Business Alliance and from Dartmouth College. And we really appreciate the participation from everybody in those meetings. One of the things that we broke off and are working on in the short term is some business owners who've created a Google Calendar that is being shared now among business owners in town that basically just identifies when really important big kind of community and regional events are happening so that all business owners know, you know, when homecoming is or when visitor weekend is, things like that. And just making sure everybody has access to that information. That's sort of the first step of a more thorough set of calendars that we can all share about what's going on. We're also looking at ways and working with the college in ways that we might integrate the downtown more into orientation for new students. Also provided an update from Sustainable Hanover on Hanover Community Power, which I touched on a little bit. And also an update on a styrofoam collection, which is on Saturday, February 11th from 10 to noon at Hanover Public Works. The snow date is the next day. So if you have clean styrofoam that you'd like to recycle, which is not a great material, and hopefully we can work on phasing materials like that out. There's a lot of environmental and health concerns with it, but if you do have it and it is clean, you can bring it over to Public Works to get it recycled, which is certainly better than throwing it in the trash. We also have a new chair on Sustainable Hanover for recycling and waste reduction, and that is Lynn Sheldon. So thank you, Lynn. A couple other quick updates. We have a new website that we are working on. This is not only going to be a huge step up as far as how up-to-date information is, how easy it is to find stuff, but you'll be able to create an account on the website, get updates in all sorts of different areas when we post new information. This is going to integrate with a new program over at Parks and Rec for signing up for events. It's also going to integrate with a new service that we're going to be launching in the future that will allow members of the public to directly report non-emergency service requests, and it will go right to the department necessary. So instead of sending an email, it'll go into an actual work management system with a tracking number, like a case number, that will make it a lot easier and more kind of accountable for all the kind of things that come into us. So we'll have a little bit more information and announce more about that. I had a couple other updates in my report. A bunch of partnerships with surrounding communities and some other stakeholders on public transit and some other initiatives, as well as I've spent a little bit of time up at the college, both at the Rockefeller Center and at Tuck, meeting with students, doing some panels and workshops. And it's really exciting. It's met so many interesting, smart students who are really interested in getting involved in local government. And of course, that inspires a little bit about our community spotlight that I mentioned earlier in this month. So that is the update for our month of January. If you have any questions about anything in there, please feel free to reach out to my office. And I hope that you'll stick around and listen to both of our spotlight episodes. Thank you again for listening, learning, providing feedback, and just being generally engaged in what's happening in your community. You can find all the episodes of Hanover Happenings at hanoverhappenings.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again.